Hey everybody, and welcome to the second edition of the Burt Betterman Bettercast, as it's now become known. We've made some improvements, some upgrades. We now have a lot of interesting light features, a lot of interesting graphics. We got a makeup crew, we got a clothing design crew, outfitting crew. I hope that all comes through on this audio-only podcast. So I'm really excited today for this second edition because I have the one and only Mr. John Schultz from Optimum Performance Iowa in Urbandale, who in my opinion, granted I don't know every physical therapist on the entire face of the planet, but I think for my money, he's the best one that I've ever worked with. And I know that because I literally have worked with him. I've been working with him for almost a year now, I think. He's got a litany of different degrees and education certifications and things of that nature, starting with, interestingly enough, a bachelor's degree in psychology from Vanderbilt University, which I have a question on that in a moment. But anyway, welcome. Thanks for being on, John. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Brett. Thanks for the kind words. You flatter me. I don't know. I'll just say thank you. I appreciate that. That was very kind.
Absolutely. You're worth it. So, starting with Vanderbilt University, I got a non-related question here. Why is it that every time the Florida Gators, who happen to be my favorite football team, I don't know if you knew that or not yet, but every time the Florida Gators, in their heyday even, happened to be having a really good season, the one team they struggled with that either beat them or took them down to the wire was Vanderbilt. Even if they were terrible, they could be 0-9 and they would beat Florida. How in the world is that possible?
That's a great question. I mean, Vanderbilt is not known as a football powerhouse in the SEC. When I was there, we just got slaughtered. I remember going to games. Auburn, just, they were brutal. I mean, it was hard to stay past the second half to get through some of these games. But and for whatever reason, they don't have an athletic department. They just totally scuttled that. So, I don't know. I think they play with a chip on their shoulder. I think they really have nothing to lose because no one really ever anticipates that they're going to win a game in the SEC. They've had some decent coaches. And again, the players are really just go out there and just let it hang loose and have everything to gain and nothing really to lose. And I think they play just pretty free, I guess. Commodore fan, Vanderbilt fan, but they're kind of known more for baseball. They've done really well with baseball, but football, just taking that many players and having it's difficult for them to compete against Florida and those other teams. They're just too massive. So
yeah, they do when it's Florida.
I don't think I came up with a good answer, but it is fun. It is fun when they beat the Goliath type team.
Sure, absolutely. It's a good place to play from when you have nothing to lose, I suppose. So anyway, you got a bachelor's degree in psychology from Vanderbilt University, and then you got your master's in physical therapy from the U.S. Army Baylor's program, is that right?
That's correct, yeah, master's program in physical therapy, so Baylor, yeah, that's what my degree says.
Okay, so were you in the Army?
I was in the Army for almost 12 years, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I actually paid for my master's. Yeah, very fortunate.
So then somehow they work with Baylor, is that what the deal is?
Yeah, I don't know how it all worked. I actually was in school in San Antonio, Texas. I never went to Waco, Texas, where Baylor is located. We could have gone down there and watched a football game or something, but that was in 97, 98. They weren't really that good, so I had no interest in going there. Somehow the military, Army, Air Force had some kind of agreement with Baylor that they would put Baylor on the degree to give it some, I think, added credibility. And so I don't know how that all worked out, but it worked out well for me.
Yeah, obviously, I would agree. That's cool stuff. So now that we got some of the education stuff out of the way, let's get straight to the point. I think everybody wants to know the number one question on their mind: what is the best music to work out to?
That's,
and I want some scientific references here.
Well, you know, unfortunately, I should have. You gave me some heads up as far as the question. I some research on that, but I am remiss. I mean, I'm a YouTube guy. I mean, I like Dream, King of Leon. I mean, I have kind of a collective taste. Of course, Guns N' Roses, you know.
Right.
You know, shout out to you and Guns N' Roses.
That's
but
a good one.
I think, you know, whatever really motivates the patient that kind of speaks to their inner core, you know, what's going to motivate them, what's going to drive them, you know, to have a good session and to put forth good effort. So it's pretty interesting, the different type taste of music I see. Normally when clients come in my clinic, I'll let them pick some music, or again, I'm not going to force them to listen to what I like to listen to.
That's a great point. Whatever you enjoy, right? Motivation's the key.
It really is.
Yeah.
Life's too short to listen
right.
to someone else's crappy music.
So we were talking about your psychology degree earlier, and I think for me the thing that sets you apart, in my opinion, from a lot of other physical therapists, is the fact that you're not just an exercise guy, you're not just a biomechanics guy. Like, you understand the nervous system, the mind, people's emotions, and how all that stuff interplays and manifests physically. So I guess, can you give us a little bit of insight into how your psychology degree and that part of your background has kind of helped and shaped your career and your effectiveness?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's evolved over time. I mean, I've been a therapist over 20 years. So I think, you know, I hate to say trial and error, that's not going to sound very scientific to you, but you know, just working with thousands of patients and athletes and clients and just trying to figure out what's going to work best for that individual. And a lot of times it's a very, it's different from, you know, other people. But I think my psychology training gave me an appreciation for how the mind really impacts, how the body responds, you know, how it affects posture, affects breathing. And when I was in psychology, it was kind of looked at as a soft science. It was kind of like, oh, you're in psychology. You know, that's not like biochemistry. That's, you know, organic chemistry. You were kind of looked at as, you know, oh, you're taking some easy classes.
Right.
And
yeah.
I think now the science is really starting to show, and functional MRIs, and you're now scanning the brain and seeing the relationship between how emotions and how your state of mind and how you interact with other people, you know, how that can really have an impact on your physical health and well-being. So now it's kind of becoming more accepted, and it's something I know affected me and my clients. So I just continue to study, and I continue to learn from my patients. Like yourself, you've taught me a lot. Taught me a great deal. So I always try to use my patients' experience, and I mean, they're the subject matter experts of their body. If they tell me something, you know, it's not for me to say, well, that's really not the case. I really have to factor in how they're experiencing, you know, the rehab, the PT experience. So I mean, just a quick summary, you know, as a physical, you know, and we all put labels on people and categorize. I do it, you know, like, oh, he's a physical therapist. Well, you know, I feel like yes, that's what my degree says, but it's evolved to encompass a lot of other areas, because I know just physical therapy is not going to really help my patients to get to where they want.
Yeah, well said. And I can attest to that just from experience. I know from us working together, I think it took me a while to come around to the idea, but a lot of the things that we were working on were definitely more nervous system related than actual tissue problems. I mean, I think I was always made to believe that if you had pain or stiffness or mobility problems, that you had tissues that need to be worked on, whether it's massage or any sort of modality like that, physical therapy. You need to exercise it, you need to work it, and sometimes it might just be the fact that you're stressed out and you're tense and your body's protecting something and it doesn't feel like letting you move, and maybe you have to relearn, like, you know, your body thinks it needs to protect you and it really doesn't, and you need to learn how to let go and be safe maybe in certain situations. And I think you have a handle on that more than anybody else I've ever known. So,
I appreciate it. I'm continuing to learn, and you know, the science is continuing to evolve. And you hit on some good points, because the brain is kind of your CEO, it's your executive, and it makes the decision to determine whether you're, you know, are you in pain? Is this movement going to potentially increase your pain? Is it going to cause more tissue damage? And again, we, you know, it's self-protective and very sensitive. So we have to create strategies and really factor in the mental component of how your body responds to injury and trauma and the whole healing process.
Right. Along those same lines, I guess, on that subject matter, you're certified in something specifically called postural restoration, right?
Correct.
Which, I guess, can you explain what that is for people that haven't heard that before?
Sure. Postural restoration is, I mean, it's kind of a term that's coined by one of my mentors out of Lincoln, Nebraska. Actually, he's a physical therapist, but he, you know, started out in dental school. The guy's, I feel, brilliant. So he synthesized a lot of components revolving around both static and dynamic postures, how breathing affects the central nervous system, how vision, a number of factors affect your body's response to external environment and how we move. So it's not only, you know, from a biomechanics, you mentioned biomechanics, not only biomechanics, which is important, but, you know, how do you use the right and left sides of your body? A lot of times, even though we think we're fairly symmetrical or balanced, we're really not. Our body is not set up to be that way. And I think he's done a good way through postural restoration of appreciating the side-to-side differences and how you need to kind of incorporate that into your PT in order to get a more successful outcome. Because if you don't take that into account, you're just not going to be as successful working with patients.
Hey, what's that gentleman's name again?
Ron Haruska, Haruska. He's a Czechoslovakian guy, and you know, I feel very brilliant. He'll admit, you know, this is a lot of the stuff, the anatomy, physiology. He did not. I mean, it's not like he created this, but he's created a system that organizes testing and assessment and treatment into something I feel like it's very effective and understandable for both the patient and the therapist to apply, and I just had much more effective outcomes since studying, becoming certified, and incorporating that into my main treatment regimen.
Cool, that's very interesting. I'm gonna have to look that guy up. I don't think I've ever, we've talked about that before, but I don't think I've ever read up on him. Now I'm interested.
And there is an article, and maybe we can put a link on there.
Sure.
From Men's Health, April, that was an article written based on his philosophy and how he treats patients.
I think it
would be helpful for your readers to read, but it's very breathing oriented. You know, a lot of times I'm very interested in how, and as you know, because of some of your experiences, you know, how does the airway and how do you properly diaphragmatically breathe or maybe not breathe so effectively with your diaphragm, how that's going to really impact the stress on the nervous system and how your nervous system reacts to not being as balanced. And it has huge implications,
right,
just for how your body responds.
Absolutely. I would totally agree. Another thing that would strike somebody if they're looking at, by the way, your new beautiful website, which I'll put a link up to in the notes as well. Optimum Performance is the name of your business. And that would indicate to me by name that it's not just for rehabbing an injury. That sounds more like, you know, even if somebody feels adequately healthy, but they just want to get better at something, they can come see you. Is that right?
Oh, that's definitely correct, and that was, you know, kind of part of the reason I came up with that that name, and just that, you know, my philosophy is, even though, you know, people right now are out there and they're doing, they're functioning, you know, they feel like they're functioning pretty well, and they might be performing at a fairly high level. However, you know, it sometimes comes at a cost, or they, you know, potentially really hurting their low back because they're overusing those muscles, or are they trashing their shoulder because they don't have real good core strength and good breathing, good ribcage biomechanics. So I always feel like, and I work with a lot of swimmers, a lot of athletes, overhead throwers, and yourself, golfers, and that's what I really want to help people understand is, if that's why it helps to see a physical therapist who's trained in this, so they can really evaluate and assess, are you doing this as healthy as possible? I mean, we can use Tiger Woods as an example. I mean, for years, I mean, yes, he was crushing the ball, he was winning tournaments, I mean, he was, like, destroying his competition. However, he built a body that now has had three back surgeries, and, you know, his golf, we won't go into all his golf swing issues, but, I mean, that's someone who appeared on the outward, like, wow, this guy's just, he's a machine, he's going to destroy Jack Nicklaus's record. And now we really haven't heard from him in the last 2 years. I don't know if he'll ever come back to golf, so. I don't know if Tiger Woods is a great example, but everyone knows him, so.
Well, either way, I mean,
throw that out there.
You struck a chord there, because ever since a kid, when I first got into golf, Tiger Woods has been my hero. And by the way, I think everything that's happened to Tiger Woods in the last few years, whatever your opinion is of him, I mean, it's one of the biggest tragedies in the history of sports. If he doesn't come back, and it seems unlikely that he will, and break Jack Nicklaus's record, like, this was something I felt like I was entitled to watch in my generation, and now it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's, He was exciting. He brought so much excitement to golf, and just for many reasons. And, you know, again, he can be kind of a polarizing, contentious person because of some of his off-the-course things that he did. And, you know, I'm not really wanting to get in there and comment on all that, but you're right. He was an exciting, he just changed the way golf. They had to change golf courses from him.
Right.
I think everyone really notched up their game. They became much more physical and concerned about their health.
Mm-hmm.
Because they realized, you know, if they weren't tip-top shape, they were just going to get smoked and destroyed in a tournament. However, I mean, Tiger Woods' swing, the velocity that he attacked the ball, I mean, you can't argue he's had three back surgeries. Something it was a mess there.
Right. And I know you said you didn't want to get into the specifics of his golf swing necessarily, and maybe that's just out of respect for staying on topic, but I'm going to go there anyway. I know you're not you're not a golf coach, you're not a swing instructor, but is there anything that you saw, either in the way he changed his golf swing, or just the golf swing as it's been his whole career, that you think made him less than as long lasting as he wanted to be in his career?
Yeah, I mean, there was talks about how much he really would just hyperextend the knee and really lock
right.
out the knee as he came through. I mean, he had some meniscal injuries to his knee, which I think affected the way, therefore, he would, you know, put more stress on his back because he wasn't able to load that left side as much. And then there was, I think, he just changed physically where he, I think, went to lifting so much weight, became so, he just really became very muscular. Obviously, I'm not his therapist. I haven't evaluated him. I'm just saying from what I observed from on TV and, you know, just what I've heard, you know, and read in golf magazines about some of what he changed. I mean, he was just putting excessive amounts. I mean, Johnny Miller is the one, I think, who early on kind of
right.
called it out and referred to, you know, Tiger's swing was, he was just hyperextending too much through his back. get too much rotation, and then just, you know, the velocity at which, you know, and you play college golf, you know, and you have your decent size. I mean, when you're talking a lot of force coming through there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you're generating a lot of force on these joints in the back, in the knee, and again, it just, and who knows, maybe you rush back too quickly. You know, he didn't allow it to heal adequately. But I don't know. I don't really hear anything else from him. You would think he has access to probably some of the premier rehab professionals out there in the world. And
right.
I don't know if they're really having any luck getting him back into it. But, I mean, both you and I know at that level, I mean, you have to be firing at all cylinders.
Right.
If you're not, there's no way you're going to survive on the PGA Tour. Those guys are just, they're just too good.
Right.
I mean, they're not going to make mistakes.
Right. So, okay. We got sidetracked a little bit, but I mean, you never know where these things are going to go, but that was interesting. We got a Tiger Woods reference in there. That's great. That'll probably boost the ratings for the podcast a bunch, I'm sure.
Who knows? I probably will get a cease and desist order or something. Who knows? Or a libel lawsuit or something.
Yeah, I'll probably get
by his attorney.
I'll probably get knocked down by Google search now for trying to boost my ratings. But anyway, so we were talking essentially about the concept that your business is Optimum Performance Iowa, so you don't necessarily have to be injured to go there. So, so for somebody who isn't injured and says, well, I know how to work out, I know what I'm doing, I go to the gym, why would I bother? What would you say to them?
I mean, I don't want to be flippant, but, you know, you're rolling the dice here. I mean, in a sense, I mean, depending on, I don't know what that person's training is, or if, you know, they really have been through a lot of biomechanics or, you know, training to know that they're really using their body in a safe and effective, efficient manner. I get people in, I take a look at a number of functional tasks, a number of mobility, strength, balance types tasks to really look at, you know, are they truly using the correct muscles at the correct time and inhibiting the muscle that shouldn't be firing. Another thing is breathing. No one really evaluates breathing, but are they breathing correctly diaphragmatically? I mean, that's a huge part of movement. Or are they using their upper chest, their neck, musculature that, you know, uses 30% more energy than your diaphragm does? And then that can have a huge implication on posture and stress on the low back, because the diaphragm actually connects into the low back and has connections with the spine. So that has a huge implication for that.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have talked much about the hip flexors.
Sure.
You know, your buddy, the hip flexors, I mean, they run in parallel with the diaphragm. In anatomy class, you cannot separate a hip flexor from the diaphragm, which is huge because that affects breathing, tension, stress. We're sitting so much these days. So, and then the other thing is, you know, how do they really sit? You know, how are they sitting at their computer? How do they get up from a chair? What position are they sleeping? You know, a lot of these activities that are not per se their workout, but affect the way they move and the way they initiate movement, and then also are precursors to, you know, how do they squat, or, you know, how do they work out in the gym? Because I have many people come in and they're like, oh, I didn't know I was supposed to stand up that way, or I didn't know I wasn't supposed to sit at my desk that way. Again, I'm not trying to lecture them, but there is a safe and effective way to do this. We've never been instructed. Not like you're taught in school. This is how you should sit. And the stresses of modern day world are, I mean, they're huge. And I don't think our bodies have not evolved kind of accept and to be able to function in that environment. I think you could speak to that possibly.
Right.
Or
yeah.
You have, but you understand the implications of that as well as anyone.
Yeah, I think that's one of, like, the, I don't know, it's a very sneaky sort of problem because on one hand, you know, you have a job that is your career and makes you money, and you know, you're at your job for 8, 9, 10 hours a day, mostly sitting. And then at the same time, you want to be healthy. So you're like, well, after work, I'm going to go to the gym. So you're sitting for 8, 9, 10 hours, which changes a lot of things about you. And that changes your nervous system, your stress levels, your physiology, everything while you're sitting there. And then you go to the gym and you start busting ass, so to speak, doing squats or power cleans or whatever it is. And And I was doing that for a long time too. And I think for a while it helped me. And then when I was a little older and not quite as resilient, it started to tear me down. And I think it's, you need to find a way to get out of that office state to be able to support some of those, really heavy dynamic lifting movements, I think.
No, that's a great point. And I see that all the time. I mean, I can't blame people, you know, they are making a living doing what they're supposed to do, tied to a computer, very analytical, very detailed, or what I call left brain, you know, using that left brain, which really stimulates the right part of the body because it controls all the right musculature on that left side of your brain. And then they're like, well, I'm going to go in a group exercise class, or I'm going to go flip some tires, or like you said, do some deadlifts, you know, kind of go back to their, you know, when we were hunter-gatherers, I mean, we were very physical. We were out there using our bodies all the time. And so there is that primal appeal to just go out there and get physical. But as you said, if 8, 9 hours you've just been sedentary on your butt, that's going to be very difficult for your body to safely do. I mean, it's going to be able to do it initially, sure. But eventually that comes at a cost.
Like I said, I can attest to that. So slightly turning gears here a little bit. What's your take on diet? Do you talk about diet and the way your patients eat at all when they work with you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a nutritionist, so I try to respect that and be careful of that, but I've done a lot of reading and research because I'm very interested in that as far as how it affects performance, and I think it does. You need good fuel in. And it's some of the obvious stuff, and I've read in your post. I think you do a good job. You've done a lot of research with some of the things on light. You know, I won't go down that rabbit hole, but just sunlight, being outside, some of the grounding things we talked about, I think are just as critical as nutrition, or even sometimes more.
Mm-hmm.
But that's probably another blog topic, another podcast.
There's a few things on there light already.
Pardon?
I've touched on light a few times on the blog already, don't you worry.
Yeah. No, I just think that you have really opened my eyes to that, and I appreciate that because I'm really trying to incorporate some more of that. I think that stuff is important. But, you know, just basic stuff where I'm telling people, let's try to get more healthy fats, more proteins. One thing I did read, pretty interesting news, and it's not new information, but mitochondrial health, when you talk about the mitochondria, which is kind of the powerhouse of your cells, which produces ATP and energy to drive this stuff, carbohydrate fasting or restriction, kind of restricting your carbohydrate intake really is healthy for kind of cleaning out some of that older mitochondria that has become kind of defective, not producing as much energy, which I think is a huge, huge issue with so many of us.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it is like, hey, can we get some healthy fats? Can we get more protein? I'm not saying carbs are the enemy, but can we shift a little bit of our focus away from the simple carbs, the highly processed ones, and can we get more healthy carbs?
Sure.
I just think people are going to have more energy, less inflammation. You know, that is one thing. Foods that are inflammatory have a huge impact. But the thing is, some people, it's amazing how some people can eat gluten and they're fine. You know, he's really, you know, gosh, he's so anal. You know, he's so focused on that. But, you know, nutrition is critical.
Sure. So we were talking about restricting carbs for a while and boosting mitochondrial efficiency and stuff. What about fasting? You ever work with that?
You know, I tried to find some information more about fasting. I didn't follow up on it. I got more interested in, you know, fasting. I think that term is interesting. It just creates a lot of, misperceptions. I don't know if that's even a word. You know, it's just people are like, they have a certain connotation to what fasting means. But I do think fasting from carbs or fasting from processed foods, maybe fasting from 7 at night till 7 in the morning. Because a lot of the research shows, you know, people who are on caloric restriction, I mean, they do have longer lives. They do have less issues, I've read, with diabetes and inflammatory conditions. So there is, and this kind of ties back to what I think you've blogged or I've seen in some of your links to how important light is and just energy, you know, sunlight, vitamin D, and just that exposure, because I really don't think we need as much food as maybe the food industry and just what we've, you know, because there's so much emphasis on nutrition now.
Right.
That you can sometimes feel like, man, I'm not eating right. You're comparing yourself, and it can really frustrate you where, you know, just doing some simple carbohydrate fasting or, you know, and reducing certain hours that you eat, I think you can gain some of the same effect. But I would never say I'm an expert on that topic. I think it's fascinating, though.
Yeah, I agree. I've read some about it. I'm not going to spew any studies or science here at this point, but I would say that, especially for me, I mean, if I'm ever struggling with gut issues or something, or just start to feel like digestion isn't at its top form or whatever, I, especially on like a weekend, I can't do it at work, but I've done it on weekends where I'll go. You know, I'll eat dinner one night and then maybe even go all the way till dinner the following day and do kind of almost a 24-hour fast. And it's tough initially, but it seems to kind of give the stomach a break and let it turn over and heal a little bit, and things seem to perk up. I won't get into that any further, I guess, than that, but I don't know. That's my experience anyway.
Yeah, I'd love to hear you talk to a nutritionist, someone who, I mean, I know I saw some PBS special on it, and it is fascinating when they look at all the blood markers.
Sure.
What happens to your glucose and your, just a lot of blood factors and just, you know, blood work stuff and how you just improve. I think it just allows the body to concentrate on other things. I think we just, our bodies are constantly in the digestive mode,
mm-hmm.
and I think that requires a lot of energy expenditure, which could be used on other things. So
sure.
That's a good point.
So I guess we were kind of talking about some subjects here, whether it's food-related, fasting, sunlight exposure, some things that are at the very least controversial at this point and maybe even kind of contrarian to what was generally accepted truths, if you will, by society. But are there other subjects on which you would consider yourself a contrarian to the masses, that you believe something different and you have a strong reasoning behind that?
That's an interesting question. I think to a certain extent, I mean, healthcare just creates the whole system of healthcare, where it's more, you know, it's not really healthcare, it's like sick care, you know, all revolves around, kind of, oh, well, I'm only going to see my PT or go to a physical therapist if I'm injured.
Right.
I mean, and I understand, you know, a lot of this isn't driven by insurance and reimbursement and, you know, out of pocket. I get that. Financially, things are, you know, tight for patients, and some patients might have already seen, you know, like when I throw out the term, well, I'm a physical therapist, you know, I can see sometimes people look at me like, oh, you're a physical therapist. Oh, okay. You know, maybe they had an experience where it wasn't the most positive, or, you know, it was, I don't know. So I guess when I go into that, I really feel like physical therapy, with what I do, or rehab, needs to be one-on-one. There's such an emphasis now because of the way things are going in the economy, where it's like the way that a lot of clinics have to operate is, well, we got to see 3 or 4 patients in an hour. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you'll work with this therapist, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, and they'll kind of turn you over to an aide, and then, you know, the therapist might recycle back to check on you. And I just don't think that's effective. You know, maybe for a certain subset of patients it is, but I think, and you're a good example, if you don't mind, I mean, sure, speaking to that, but, you know, I think what we have to do is we have to really, you know, give a patient undivided 45 minutes of one-on-one, because that's the way you're going to start, you know, really telling if you're making progress, you know, what your changes are, they really improving, and then just getting to know your patient. I mean, like I said, I've learned a lot from you, but I think that one-on-one kind of interaction that we've had has allowed us to progress farther than we could have probably ever done, is if that was done over, you know, little 10-minute snippets. I think it would have been really kind of difficult. So yeah, somehow, I guess, trying to create a system where you can work with your therapist, you know, one-on-one for a good time, and really make it individualized, less cookie cutter, and less, okay, here's a protocol, or, you know, this patient comes in with low back pain. I mean, that's just not the case, and I think you can speak to that, mm-hmm, as well. Because, you know, if we came in and said, all right, Brett, you have this, we're just going to follow this protocol. You know, we learned and deviated, and that required a lot of thought and a lot of interaction between us. So hope, yeah, that helps. But, you know, that's what I really see kind of the differentiator, how I do things differently. You know, other therapists might feel that way, but, uh-huh, it's just not how they structure their business.
Yeah, it blows me away, to be honest, just the number of times that either you send me an email midweek or I come into your office for my next visit and you'd be like, oh, you know, I was actually thinking about that situation we were talking about the other day and I was researching something. I'm like, you're thinking about this not only when I'm there, but when I'm not there. Like you said, you do a really good job of forming a relationship with the patient, getting to learn them, getting to know how they function, how they think, because everybody's different. And if you don't do that, I just don't think you get very good outcomes. So thanks to you for being willing to go that extra mile, I guess, in what you do.
No, thank you. And I mean, it's been, and that's really why I became a therapist, is, and maybe that, you know, my psychology background had a lot to do with it, but I like people, and I like the challenge of trying. And just, I'll share a little bit of my background. You know, my mom, I think I was 10 or 11, she was in a bad car accident. It just totally changed the dynamics of my life. She was in the hospital. She came out. She was on some really powerful drugs, you know, for pain relieving medicine, these powerful drugs back then. I mean, this is a long time ago. This is 30-plus years ago. You know, they didn't really understand the implications of putting people on these powerful narcotic opiate medicines.
Right.
You know, they didn't understand how it changed the brain, how it changed the body. I mean, now you can see a commercial on there, like, whoa. You know, they've actually now have a medicine that can reverse, what is it, narcotic constipation. Like, if you're taking narcotics and you're constipated, Brett, you'll appreciate that. They now have a medicine to take that reverses that narcotic-induced constipation.
Right.
So, again, I just threw that out there. But the point was, my mom is totally, it just totally changed our family dynamic. She totally changed as a person, you know, like became like a different, she used to be vibrant, dynamic. dynamic. She played softball with me. I mean, she was really out there. It's totally changed. And for me, it just kind of, like, it was a lifelong journey for me. You know, how can I improve someone's health and wellness? Because, you know, it basically took away my mom's health and vibrancy and vitality. And I was just like, that's just not right. And I don't know. It developed in me that I love reading. I love learning. I'm a nerd. It drives my wife crazy.
Yeah.
How much I'm reading, studying constantly on this stuff. But it's, I don't know. It's like, I can't get enough of that stuff. And I really just enjoy learning more about trying to be as healthy and vibrant as possible. And so I just think I fell into physical therapy. There's a lot of reasons. But it really fits kind of my personality and who I really want to be. So.
Oh, yeah. It's sometimes it's crazy how it takes some event like that for something to hit home and kind of spark a motivation or a passion for something. And it's also cool that you found the positive in a bad situation, if you will, and learn from it. So kudos to you. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, even in, you know, for my mom, it sounds, you know, when I talk about this, I guess she could listen. I don't know if she listens to podcasts. I should have probably got it cleared from her first, but I mean, she's still working in her 70s as a drug and alcohol counselor. After that, she went back to school, got her social work degree in chemical dependency and drug. And she works with a lot of adults who have addiction type issues, and she is really good at what she does. And again, because she understands that. And for me, sports was kind of that way. I was a jock. Was an exceptional athlete. I mean, I maximized every ounce of potential I had, I think, and got injured just pushing it. And so, I love working with sports-related and even non-sports-related injuries because I get such a satisfaction out of feeling that people have helped empower people to be able to get healthy and to return to what they love to do because, I don't know. That gets me jazzed when I can see someone like, you know, we were talking about the other day, just thinking about you swinging a golf club hitting a 7-iron.
Right.
I mean, I would love to be able to see you out there on the course just hitting a nice 7-iron flush, like a nice 160, 170. I think that would make my year.
That would make my year too. Hopefully I think we'll get there this year. I got a good feeling.
Yeah.
Cool. Wow, that was good. So, on a lighter note, I've been told by, I believe, another patient of yours that you apparently have, quote-unquote, a healthy glute obsession. Can you speak further to that?
Tell you about that?
I hear things.
No, I have mentioned that. Yeah, you probably know the patient. Yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, we talked about sitting. You know, you mentioned 8-9 hours of sitting. So I think in our society, there's no way, and the research actually shows the more you sit, the more fat you put on your adipose on your backside. So the glutes are so important for stabilizing the low back. It's your power muscle. We just had the Olympics. I mean, did you see any, not that I'm staring at all the track stars, but did you see any of, like, Usain Bolt, any of the track, female track athletes?
Yeah,
any of them have, like, just little flat butts?
No. To have the legs and glutes of a sprinter, like, that should be everybody's goal, right?
Yeah, there's, seems like a Tom Oak video or something like that. You could do a reference.
Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Yeah, I won't even go there. But I think it provides a lot of stability. I think it provides a lot of power. I think it's the key. It goes back to this posterior chain of muscles, your glutes, your hamstrings, your interscapular muscles. I don't think we have a problem in this country with our pecs, our quads. We're very bench press kind of leg press kind of runners, using those quad muscles. And again, that over that imbalance between the anterior and posterior side, specifically the glutes and the hamstring, create a whole host of issues. So, yeah, I can readily admit I have a healthy glute obsession.
Oh, my God. So, pun intended, I think that's a good place to end this conversation. Few things I wanted to get out of the way before we do so. Again, your business is Optimum Performance. Your website
physical
is
therapy.
Physical therapy. The website is optimumperformanceiowa.com, and I'll put that in the notes when I go ahead and post this thing, obviously. But anything else you want to get out there or speak to the people before we end the call?
I guess just a couple things. I mean, just it's amazing how much, and I understand, you know, people, it's not on the top of their list. Oh, you know, I need to go to a physical therapist today. But I hope that this, and then just, I try to get out there and just inform people. A lot of times, you don't need a referral. The great thing
right.
is, in most states, especially Iowa, it's direct access. So you can come in directly to a physical therapist, at least initially for the evaluation. I mean, that therapist can always check with your insurance company just to make sure they don't need a referral or further, like, pre-approval for more visits. But a lot of times, you know, I'm not saying skip your doctor, but if it's a musculoskeletal issue, a low back or something, when you know you go to a physician, and I'm not trying to pick on them, but, you know, they're training and, you know, they might have 10 minutes to kind of take a look at you, where you could come to a therapist and spend more time. And our expertise is those, you know, musculoskeletal, knees, back, shoulders. I mean, I see everything from head to toe. So a lot of times it does save some money, save some time to go directly to a physical therapist, you know, and that therapist should, if it's outside of the scope of their expertise, you know, say, hey, or help coordinate, you know what, this is really not, you know, a musculoskeletal issue. Maybe this is something you need to go see your doctor. So
right.
I just like to put out that, you know, a lot of people aren't really aware of that fact, that they can come in directly to a PT. Another thing is, you know, you got to be thinking, you know, it's almost the end of the year. A lot of people have already met their deductibles, and so this is a good time to go just because, you know, you probably can pay less out of pocket, you know, depending on your health care plan, because everything kind of resets in January. I mean,
mm-hmm.
dependent upon your plan. One thing I would caveat, if you're Medicare, meaning 65 or above, you do need a doctor's referral. You know, that's a government-run program,
sure.
and again, so that's a whole different, they're a little bit tighter on that. But, you know, again, I really like to encourage people that, you know, I really try to be a resource for them. Yes, obviously I want to be in business, I want to, you know, pay the bills, but I really am interested in people's health and just trying to keep people healthy because, you know, we're all in this together and, you know, the healthier we can be, that just helps us as a whole.
Absolutely. I mean, if there's one thing that I, like an overarching thing that I believe in more than anything, it's the whole preventative health care sort of thing. And a lot of people think of physical, and I did too, think of physical therapy as what you do after you get injured. But again, if you keep your body functioning well to begin with, and you keep yourself mobile and you keep yourself doing things the right way, you're hopefully and probably going to prevent future injuries and you never have to go through the rehab process potentially. So I just don't think a lot of people think of it that way, but obviously you can use it for that very purpose. So.
Yeah. I mean, the dentist, not to keep dragging on, but you know,
sure.
dentists have been very good at training people. We need to come in twice a year for a cleaning and checkup. You know, we're going to check your teeth, make sure they're in good alignment and everything. But no one really goes, boy, you know, I need to go see a therapist once a year or twice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not how things have been set and kind of organized into this healthcare system. And, you know, you bring up a great point where they say the cure or something. Sure. Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's close enough. I think you get the gist.
I usually screw those up. I got that one
right. Awesome. Well, I really appreciate having you on, and I'm glad we could have this conversation. I think it went extremely well, and hopefully the listeners enjoy it. So thanks again, John.
Thank you, Brett. Have a great weekend. I do appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. You too.